Hi, welcome to Lights, Camera, Author. I'm Jim Juno, and this is the place where we talk with authors who write about show business. And I have with me today a very special guest. If you have seen any type of British television during probably the last 30 years, you've probably seen this lady on TV or in stand-up, Helen Lederer. She has a new book out called Not That I'm Bitter. And she joins us now on Lights, Camera, Author. Welcome, Helen.
It's lovely to be here. I like the way you said the title, that you see your American accent. It had the irony, not that I'm bitter, because you think, oh God, what if people think that it's a fact, that because there's supposed to be humor in the title, like us showbiz people,
Yes, I think.
we're not bitter, are we?
Not that people know of, okay?
Indeed. Yeah.
But this is a fun read because I mean it tells your life story, and for those of you in America, I'm going to be honest with you. I've learned of you through what's known in America as public television, because I watch shows like the Celebrity Antique Roadshow,
Oh, yes.
Antique Road. I'm sorry, I messed up that title, but the Road Trip. Celebrity Antiques Road Trip, and also Midsummer Murders. You were on that. You've also done a lot of things. You can catch a lot of what you've done online. And tell me, what do you like doing best? Do you like being yourself in stand-up or being on television playing a character?
Well, good question. It's quite interesting, sort of writing the book now in the autumn of my life, because talking about it to people, I talk very honestly. I'm one of these alarmingly honest people, which is not necessarily a good thing. And so when I talk about the programs that people connect with, like in the 80s and the 90s, well, certainly in Britain, like the Young Ones, certainly Ab Fab, then you kind of feel a home, don't you? Like you must have grown up with certain programs that when you were with your friends at school in the playground, you talked about. It's really important. So I thought, okay, well, I've been in them, but I started as a stand-up. And I saw the most amazing thing recently. I'm sure you've seen it with Steve Martin, the document. I've only seen the first half of the documentary, but it fascinates me. How do people begin to go, okay, this is just me. I've written it. I'm standing up here in front of these people, hoping they're going to laugh. And as a woman in the 80s in England, we had less. There were very, very few women writing and performing their own narrative. And I'm not a particularly boastful, that's an English word, person. So my humor is very mixed up with kind of being slightly undercutting, but not aggressive. So I in the book, I'm marveling at the fact that I actually did that and I wanted to do it with such passion. But of course, then when you get invited to do, we call it BBC Radio, the difference of just go, oh, everyone is nicer to you. You go on stage and people are just smiley, smiley. They're not kind of worried that you're a woman. And then if you drop a script, they think that's hilarious. And I just thought that the different worlds. So radio, I think BBC Radio was fun in the sense that it was such a contrast from the, having to kind of battle a bit, well, a lot with audiences and stuff in the 80s.
That is true. I mean, and for a lot of people don't realize, well, a lot of the younger people don't realize nowadays that, like, back in the 80s, you just did not, well, maybe it was different in Britain as in America. You didn't see a lot of stand-up comics being female
No,
back in the 80s.
you didn't, Jim. But what interests me is I always use this example, and I think of America women. There was some the survey. There were more American women to every British woman stand up. There always has been, and I'm thinking, is it because women in America are more confident socially? You're ahead of the game in so many ways. And also, and older women occupying presenting roles ahead of the game there. I just think you're ahead of the game. So, Yeah, I don't think we've caught up a lot now. I keep meeting these 40-year-old brain box women being very confident and bold, and I'm going, paved. I did it for you. No, I didn't really. I'm not that nice. But it was interesting doing something, not because I wanted to make a point. I just had that passion, you know. And you start out, you just want to do it above anything else, even though it doesn't necessarily make you happy. That's why I love the Steve Martin thing. It wasn't about finding happiness or anything like that. It was just, I just wanted to do it. And then it took me to, you know, there was an abundance of new type programs in Britain, the Young Ones, Bottom. I don't think you see these. I mean, that's what's fascinating, the different cultures and what you get to see and what is available, and likewise here. But I did, in the English CV, probably get to be on a lot of the comedies, you know, little cameo roles. So that kept me going, Jim. But I always wanted to write. So writing really is my true passion. Yeah.
And you mentioned the like not being able to see a lot of the British television, but I think in America, if I said the show Absolutely Fabulous, Ab Fab, a great number of people would know what I'm talking about with Saunders and with French and Saunders, and so that has a following, and people may know you from there.
Okay. Well, I've heard that at one point in the 90s that people did, because it had such a fan base, because it was such a colorful, it was making fun of a time where there was an excess of PR women and PR people and fame and drugs and drink. Again, I think Britain probably drinks more than maybe American. I don't know, could be wrong, but you know, it lampooned that world. But I was told that the people did dress up as Catriona and Fleur, which were our subsidiary characters. We were not main characters. We were these, we called it a Sloane Ranger in England, but that term is sort of outmoded now. But you know, we'd sit around being quite benign but not at all helpful, and just kind of joining in a useless sort of way, not even being crucial to the plot. And I think people related to those characters, just these, because sometimes you can do more with a small, well, you have to in my case, but with smaller characters, you know? So I think it caught, people did love those characters. And I was very pleased to do it, but obviously I didn't write it. It was Jennifer Shout. But that kept going for about 20 years. But like Friends, how long does Friends gone kept going?
I think that's 10 years.
Right. Oh, right. Okay. But that's weird then. So, yeah, it wasn't regular, but people just had this affection in Britain for an irreverent, colourful sending up of excess. And I think there hadn't been a programme like it. And also, as it happened, you know, largely populated by women. Writer and women actresses in it. Yeah.
And in your book, you talk about a struggle that you had breaking into the field, breaking into becoming an actress or an actor. Matter of fact, at one point, I'll put this delicately, you became a masseuse.
Yeah, that wasn't to be an actress though. No, because I'm alarmingly honest, I look back. It's like when you're this age, and I'm not going to say the age, but it's quite old. And then you go, well, my 20-year-old self obviously, you know, you behave differently when you're young, the folly of youth. But I always kind of like danger a bit, attracted to, I'd sort of go a little bit further. My mother was always saying, stop showing off. You know, I dance with, got into trouble at school, you know, not on purpose to be a rebel, but I was just interested in pushing boundaries a bit, I think. And I did end up, for some reason, I don't know, it was a year between school and college, and I was having to earn money. And I ended up being trained by a slightly dodgy, but you see, in those days, and I don't know how you talk about it in America, the difference between dodgy and kinky was very, I don't know if you know the meaning of those words. The lines were very blurred in those days. And, you know, we have very different conversations now. So I did put those incidents in the book because I wanted to make them funny. My desire was, is, to make a reader feel that I'm talking to them and to get a narrative spin on varying disasters and strange occurrences. And that was just one, which I managed and got tube home. We call it the tube in. What do you call it? What do you call it in America? Subway. Got
Subway.
the tube, yeah.
And yeah, and speaking of kinky and dodgy, if you take the subway in like some cities, you can probably find both of those.
Right.
You
Okay.
know.
There you go. There's a good link. You
So,
see,
but
I did come to America once, hilariously, to do a screen test because you have this program. The Weakest Link was really popular at one time with Anne Robinson, and there was some idea where they would do another kind of franchise with somebody else, and they had the mad idea. They go, "Oh, Helen, you're English, completely not like Anne Robinson in any way, but you're English, British." And I screen tested for it. And it was just extraordinary because I'd had that experience of everyone was really nice, makeup girl was nice, la 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 la. Then I do the thing and I had to pretend I had to be mean to people because that was the nature of the character in this game show construct. I just couldn't do it. I mean, I'm not Anne Robinson and it was mad. And I had to sign a contract to say if I got the job, I would actually have to live and stay in America for like 7 years. I thought I signed it. I'm mad. Anyway, I didn't get it. Everyone was very short with it. Yeah, the smiles t said, "Yeah, there's a door." And thank God I didn't get it. But you know, you look back and you go, "Oh my God, what would have happened to me if I'd got it?" Because obviously, I wanted to come to America to do comedy and to do my show, but not to be Anne Robinson looky likey that I don't even looky likey even slightly. So that was an interesting experience about being in the States. Big agent's office, big tables. Yeah, amazing.
And the and I was just wondering that, you know, you like we said in the 80s, I mean, well, you mentioned in your book that, you know, women were not looked upon. Well, I'll go back even further. In the 70s, even with people like Monty Python, they had one female cast member, Carol Cleveland, and more or less, she was there for, well, for visual comedy, you know.
Pleasing on the eye. Yes.
But she wasn't like in a in any of the like the skits where she, well, I guess, you know, I
Well, she
hesitate to
would have
say that.
fed the line. I mean, I do talk about this in a kind of potted history where at the beginning to go, who are our role models? And that in those days you had like ex women who did stuff on their own were called eccentric in order to kind of explain it. To the viewer, we had an eccentric one-off, and I mean, I love the women you have. You have again many more: Phyllis Diller, Lucy Boyle, you know, and another one. One-off women, you know. But then in the sitcom land, the woman would be the feed for the man, and then and that was, you know, suburban setup, and then only latterly. Oh, and then if a woman got her own show, they would be an impressionist, and there'd be sort of singing, dancing, and very old-fashioned presentation. And then they would be funny and revered because they could do somebody else's voice, which is kind of symbolic in a way as well. I mean, great skill, but and it was some time before one woman, very wonderful Emma Thompson, who went to top university, Cambridge, was given her own show. And another woman, wonderful Victoria Wood, who came through as a talent show, the other end of the scale, there were only those two women running their own stuff. And then we had the comic strip, French and Saunders, who were champions and the elite. No other women could get in because they said, "We've already ticked the boxes of new women. We've done that." And anything else was seen as a replication of it. At that time, whereas men could you could have several men doing similar or comparable or different sitcoms alongside each other. So it was a long time, but then it was a program you wouldn't have seen called Naked Video, where I did a monologue with a glass of wine, where I was a kind of so-called, you know, talking about being single and having sex and just the normal stuff, in a funny way. And then it was 10 years after that we had Bridget Jones, which you've probably had over there. And we've only had two leading women doing sitcoms. And we had Miranda, amazing. And then 10 years after that, Phoebe Waller-Bridge. And now we have a lot more. but not loads more. So in the scheme of things, women in the UK writing, driving, producing, casting, creating, and being commissioned is quite rare still.
Even somebody like getting not the off the subject here, but even somebody like Tracy Ullman, who was a big success over in London, the main thing that she's known for here in America right now is probably her record, They Don't Know,
Oh, yes, I love that.
but then The Simpsons got their start on her television show.
Oh, right. That's interesting. Yeah, we don't connect. I don't connect that, but no, that is interesting. Wow, yeah.
And so somebody like that, and I'll be honest, when I was in college, when she had her show, and one of my British friends said, "Yes, she's really big over in London." I was like, "I've never heard of her." And they go, "Yeah, that's your fault."
And is she now? Tracy lives in America, doesn't she?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, but
But go
they're
ahead.
unusual, stand out. So to write the book, not that I'm bitter, is a difficult path because you just go, I'm not boasting because I'm not in the A team. But actually, if you're not in the A team, you get allowed to say a lot more. There was a review saying it's more interesting reading the memoirs of less successful people because it was a window into the time and obviously the relationships I had with people. And I could reveal more because I didn't have so far to fall. So I think I probably have revealed a lot, but always with the hope of finding the funny in the scenario because because I think that saved me.
You talk about when you were younger. And you did this I think, on one of your naked video shows. You talk about shoplifting, and I think in the naked video show you said, "It's not that you do. I just like to not you need it. You just like to shoplift."
Yeah, so maybe there was a little yes. So taboo areas, breaking the law. Do you think America is more law-abiding than Britain? I mean, is the humor, how would
Oh.
you describe the humor being different? Because I am aware of it. I'd love to come to the States, but I don't know if my humor would land because humor is so instinctive and rhythm. It's
Oh,
about rhythm.
I think there'd be an audience. Right now in America, I think a lot depends on what political party you belong
Right. Yeah.
to.
Okay.
You know,
Yes.
I mean,
Yeah.
I laugh at the opposite side, and I'm sure that they sometimes look upon our side as being the end of the world, you know?
Right.
So,
So I dare not ask you which sides. Let's not go to sides, because
oh,
I know nothing. But yeah, we do live in those times. But humor is a place to make safe or to go there.
it
Humor
does.
is fantastic.
And see, and I remember when I was watching stand up and everything, that you never heard political humor. I mean, in stand up, it was basically like, well, Richard Pryor or Steve Martin. They never did political humor. They did topical humor.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. Well, we had Ben Elton who hosted Saturday Night Live, which was our version of from same title as yours. And I went on as a stand-up comedian then, doing my own material. And I is quite cringy looking back stuff. But yeah, I think we'll talk about Margaret Thatcher, so he did, but because we had such a regime that in the 80s, alternative comedy was you'd say Margaret Thatcher and you'd get a laugh, just there. But that's interesting you say that Pryor didn't talk about politics overtly. Yeah. I don't know which way we're going now. I get bored quite easily. So I don't like it when the people talk about their pets and families so much. I just go, I don't want to know that you're a really sort of a complacently smug middle class married person. To me, that's unless they're going to come out with a kind of slice it and undermine it in some way. I kind of need to know the pain And as long as it's a bit of pain and awkwardness, then I will laugh. Do you know what I mean? But I don't like hearing people feedback their domestic happy lives. That's not appealing to me in terms of humor.
You were on
Not that I'm
like
bitter.
not that you're bitter, no.
No.
You were also well, you were a contestant on Strictly Come Dancing.
No. There was a much older and possibly larger woman than me called Anne Widdecombe, who was a politician. Now, she set the trend of being the clown with, it was quite bizarre. You'd have her as a contestant, and then everyone else was young and beautiful and could dance or dance excellently, but and so I would have to fulfill that role if I went on it. To be winched around. That would be the only way forward for me. And I think the clown role has now gone because it is taken off as a kind of showcase of sparkly, fantastic, achieving dancers. So there is no place for people who aren't very good. They would always have one slightly not good person and then hope that people would vote for them. And then if they voted for them too much, they'd have to go. One of our journalists actually had to take himself off it. Because he realized he can dance and everyone kept voting him in. And it wasn't fair to the very, talented dancers. So it's a risk, isn't it? A talent contest. It's not a level playing field now.
Well, even in your book, when at the very beginning, you are on a diving board,
Yep.
and they're telling you that they want you to show more.
Yes, well, I sort of making that into a kind of joke because I set the scene each time, so slightly embellished, but nevertheless, it did trend on Twitter that a middle-aged woman in a swimming frock, it was a frock, because I insisted on adding material around the down belows. I thought I cannot, and I look back and I go, why? And then I thought, why do it for money? So it was very nice money. Bought some nice garden furniture. So you just go, money job, I haven't done one like, oh damn, I've got to dive off a dive. Yeah, I thought about that second. If you were in the A team, you wouldn't do that. But being in the C team, you can. So there are advantages to not being in the elite. And I'm propping up the elite by being in the C. That's how I see it.
So, see, we have a saying here in America on the A list, as you say, the A team, and I think it goes all the way down to the D list in America.
D, A to D. Well, I'm lower, A, B, C. Oh, no, you're lower. I don't know the answer. Yeah, you're lower. That's good. That's humble. Good to be humble.
Exactly. Now, I gotta ask you on Celebrity Antique Road Trip, did you win?
Do you know? I'd like to remember. Did I? I probably did. I was with the guy Hardeep. Yeah, I think I probably won. Yeah, I'm going to say I did, but I can't completely remember. But I do remember having to drive slightly wonky old cars around the small lanes of Britain. So you favour that programme, do you, Jim? You like that?
I still watch it. Yes, indeed. I mean, it's, and for those
What's
of
its
you,
appeal?
what's an appeal?
Yeah, what's appealing about it? Yeah.
I like watching people. First off, I like watching intelligent television. I think it's an intelligent show. And people are so nice when they're even when they're bartering with the store owner. It's like I want 15 pounds for this. Well, how about if I give you 12?
Right. So that is, you find that intelligent. I should do
Hey.
more of that. Yeah. Yeah.
And for those of you who don't in America who don't have not seen this show, look for it on public television. But what it is that two celebrities, British celebrities, go around Britain in an old car. And they search for buys at what you would call antique stores, or well, I guess what we call them here in America, swap meets, something like that. But and then they try to sell them at auction, and whoever makes the most money is
Wins.
the winner.
Yeah,
So, but and that so you won that one. That's fantastic.
I think I did. And these are the jobs that come in. I'm sure it's the same in America where you get asked to do things. And you have to go back, like, how did I start? I started the comedy store, other venues, then the kind of big alternative comedy thrust, and then carried on. And now I've set up Comedy Women in Print Prize, sort of out of anger, really, to encourage and publish unpublished witty women writers, fiction writers, and a platform for recognized ones. So I'm a bit of a do-gooder now. So I've set up this prize where I have to kind of beg agents who've chucked me or I've chucked in the past to say, oh, and that very famous client, could you, could they be a judge for our prize? So I'm doing good works, but I'm not a good person. And then I've just been in a soap. We have a thing called a soap opera here called Coronation Street.
Coronation Street, yes.
And that was like bizarro, just to be asked to be the love interest of the wonderful 92-year-old Ken Barlow. And that was a joy. So you just never know. But I do want people to read because the memoir came after my novel, Losing It. And I think you can get it on Amazon in America. And I think I've never been happier than when I'm writing and then going around to these literary festivals, which is like stand-up comedy, but with clapping, and having really frank conversations with the audience and like just saying it. And finally, I just think, you know what? I can just do that now. I'm not, every night is different. And, I'm, it's just beautiful to be able to actually finally say what I really think. And it is in the book.
Fantastic. And the book is called Not That I'm Bitter, and the author's name is Helen Lederer. It is out now, I believe.
It is, and you can get it on Amazon in America, which is where you
Amazon.
are.
Exactly, Amazon, but this show goes worldwide. So if you're in Britain or in the UK, you can also find it
Okay.
on Amazon in the UK.
I love when you
Helen
say Amazon. I like that.
Amazon.
I love it.
Well, Helen, thank you for being here on Lights, Camera, Author with me.
It's been lovely, Jim.